BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Angelica Bell, and I'm a television and radio presenter who's worked in broadcasting for over 20 years. Now, I think it's really important not to live a life of regret. And in my first episode of One to One, I sat down with chef and presenter Nadia Hussain. She won the Great British Bake Off show in 2015, and in her winner's speech, she promised to never put boundaries on herself again. This is a thought process that many of us can relate to, and so I wanted to explore the actual practical nature of making a major life change. Joining me today is therapist Alice Bian, who works with clients who are looking to make major changes in their lives and navigate their feelings. Alice previously worked in the field of social research before making a major change for herself and decided to no longer put off the call to pursue becoming a therapist. Alice, how are you? Thank you so much for being here.
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'm really intrigued by your story. So tell me a bit about your journey to become a therapist.
It was something I had thought that I wanted to do for quite a while, but I think there were kind of various things that happened in my life that pushed me more and more towards it. So one of the things is there's quite a lot of mental health stuff in my family. So that was going on at the time, and I very much had eyes on that. So that was one thing that triggered it. I was also, so we're talking kind of in my 20s here, and I was looking around at my friends, and we were all absolutely floundering mentally. I think everyone was doing well, and everyone was, you know, from the outside, no one was kind of necessarily in crisis, but just everyone was felt unanchored. And I think in a way that got me very kind of interested in what was happening there. Like all these people I loved and cared about, trying to work out what was going on with them. Like, why was that person struggling so much? What was going on there? And I think that really kickstarted me just thinking about those kind of things all the time. And just the most important thing in life is working out all of this stuff. So it makes sense to me to go down that road. But it was really hard because I was looking at what I'd have to do to train, and it was hard. There was one specific day I remember just sitting there and I felt so miserable. I just felt so low, and I just thought, and nothing bad had happened. You know, if you'd have asked anyone around me, like, is she okay? They'd probably be like, yeah, she's fine, you know, all good. But actually, I just felt so kind of lost and not myself. And that was the moment. And it wasn't even a nice feeling. It was like a feeling of almost a frustration of like, come on, you've got to do something. This is ridiculous. Like, it wasn't a happy, joyous, like, oh my God, how exciting feeling. It was really a miserable feeling. Right. But it was the thing that got me going, I think.
From your perspective, what does a therapist do? Because I know there's mixed thoughts out there and different stigmas put on it.
So you obviously have lots of different types of therapists who work in different ways. From where I sit, and the way I see it is, you're helping people to understand themselves. And I very much believe that the more you understand yourself, the more command you have of yourself. And I think from there, the world around you starts to feel a bit more in your control. An analogy I often think about with therapy is it's almost like you're mapping your mind. And I think when you're born, when you're young, when you're raised, you have a very kind of, you have this map that's almost given to you. And that will be like by your parents, by your upbringing, by your culture, the town you're raised in, the school you went to. All of this stuff kind of helps form this map of who you are. And you don't have much to do with it when you're a kid because you're not really in control. I think as you become an adult, you want to expand that map and you want to start putting more bits into it and understanding, like, I guess if using the map analogy, it's like adding in B roads, adding in mountain ranges, all of this stuff on this map. And from there, you can start seeing new routes. So you can start navigating in a different way and being like, oh, I just hadn't seen that road. I can go down this one. I thought it was just like the A roads and I thought I had to do this. And so I guess it's a mapping exercise in that sense.
I love that analogy. Oh, that's great. Now I'm actually looking at my life like a map. So, you know, generally speaking, and from the people you've spoken to, how hard is it? Because change, nobody really likes change, do they? We like the norm to feel comfortable. But sometimes we do have to step out of that, don't we?
I think it can be so hard. I think much harder than, I think if it was easy, people would be doing it a lot more often, because like talking about the idea of invisible forces, you are fighting against a lot when you're making meaningful change. Because I think so much of how we see the world and how we behave, how we interact is so kind of embedded in us from such a young age. And to really kind of change the way you see things or to change the way you do things involves quite a kind of overhaul of things that feel so safe and normal to you. And I think there's such a kind of like, you know, all your subconscious, your soul, like whatever you want to call it, it's trying to keep you safe, basically. It's, you know, trying to protect you. It's trying to do a good thing.
Yeah.
But in that process, it can often be holding you back from changing.
That is so true. So I learned to ride a bike 5 years ago. And even when I say out loud, I just feel like a fool. Because most children learn to ride a bike when they're children. But I remember as a child being told, you won't be very good at that.
Really?
Yeah, so I've had that my whole life. So I was like, okay, bikes for me don't go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And then I was asked to be on a show where I learned to ride a bike and then cycle a section of the Tour de France. Now, in my head, I didn't think I have to cycle the Tour de France. All I was thinking was, I need to learn to ride a bike. Shall I just do this to learn to ride a bike? In the back of my mind, all I could think was, you could never do it.
Yeah.
It was like this constant battle.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I've got to. I want to be able to ride my bike with my family. I want to be part of those experiences. So I'm going to have to do this. Literally, I did the show. I was crying. Because all I could hear was those little voices in my head saying, you won't be. And I fell off. When I first got on the bike, my balance, I couldn't do it. I was scared, the fear. I didn't sleep. I was like, what have I done?
It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. Someone told you that once and then it became the truth. Was there, I mean, was there any reason that you couldn't? That
no, they exactly. You couldn't now looking back, and I'm like, what? I should have said to them, you're talking a load of rubbish. Because it's just like a bike. It's not like a life-changing or a degree or anything. It was just to ride a bike.
Yeah. And I think the point of that looking to someone else like it might be a small change or not a big thing. Because, yeah, you get your people who like overhaul their lives, move abroad, leave a relationship, these really big life changes. But I think change can be much more kind of micro level and almost a bit imperceptible to someone else. It could be just... Yeah. Slight changes in the way you do your day and slight changes in your routine that just totally overhaul the way you see things.
Have you had any other new starts or challenges you've overcome?
So I did actually, and I think this might apply to you as well. I started running really late in life.
Same here.
Yeah. So it was something I never did exercise when I was younger. I was pretty sedentary child. I used to just... sit around. But I had this feeling, I was like, this running thing seems like it, there's something about it. And I'd have dreams that I was running before I started running. So I was like, oh, there's something in me that obviously wants to do this. But getting out of breath used to stress me out. Like so many bits of it, I was like, there is no way I'm going to be a runner. And I basically decided to do that one day. And that's hard when you've never done that before, because you start and you're like, oh, this does not feel nice.
And then you run for about 5 minutes and you're like, I need to go home.
And you hear people doing like running miles, 10, you know, 5 miles, 10 miles. And you just think, no, that is not possible, surely. So you build up.
But what do you think about goals then? Because the reason why I started running was because I got my job at CBBC.
Right.
And my life changed. And I thought, I need to do something. I need to give back. So I just signed up for the London Marathon. I'd never run before.
Wow.
So I wasn't interested in the time. All I was interested in was raising money for charity and getting from A to B.
Yeah. It's. I think it's a really fulfilling thing to do. Because I'm the same. I was never really into like time or running really fast or competing with other people's times or anything like that. But it was a kind of personal fulfillment thing of just watching myself get a bit better and just like slowly like building up, and like you felt like you were getting a bit fitter and all these like small little changes, again, not for anyone else, no one else would have noticed particularly, but that felt good. And it felt like just sticking to something I'd decided to start that I never thought I'd be able to do.
So what are some of the most common mental barriers that prevent people from making a new start, would you say?
One of the big things I think, and this is just from speaking to clients and then also just, you know, friends, people I know, I think people underestimate how much they're influenced by other people. I think it is so rare for people to be doing things just for themselves. And I think when you've got, and it, like you're talking about having voices in your head, I think they come from all sorts of places and they feel like they're your voices. But actually, I think you might, you know, an example might be that your parents, you know, they have a particular job and the expectation is that you do something a bit similar to that. You might feel that's your decision. It's those voices are so strong. And I think, and again, this kind of goes back to the idea of, you know, mapping and thinking of different routes. I think some of those different routes feel so impossible sometimes because the voices telling you they're not possible are so kind of loud and strong in your head.
Yeah. Do you think discipline as well, or, you know, when you're used to doing something else to change it? I remember when I started playing the cello again, I literally had to write in my diary when I was going to practice.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, the washing's more important. important.
Yeah.
This is more important. But I had to put it in as if it was part of the day and structure my life. And then it became sort of, okay, I'm not going to do it every day, but at least 3-4 times a week. And then it just became habit. You know, is that something we need to look at, think, or maybe prioritizing things?
I think that's true. And I think also often with that, you might have felt like, I need to do the washing. And that felt in you like, well, there's just something else I need to do now. Or sometimes people feel that they're just being lazy or they can't be bothered. I think fear is so often what is going on there, really. And I think fear can be disguised by lots of other emotions. And that's why people give themselves quite a hard time, because they'll be like, I don't really know why I didn't do that. I knew I was supposed to do that today and I didn't. I'm not sure what it was in me that stopped me doing that. I'm just lazy, couldn't be bothered, not good enough, all of those kind of things. So often what you're actually battling with is a real kind of depth of fear, because again, it's there's something in you that's trying to sort of keep you safe. And it might be, you know, fear somewhere down the line of rejection or failure or these quite like big things. And so it's playing out day to day that I'm just not going to go over there and play the cello. But actually, there's some quite profound things going on in that moment where you decide not to play the cello that day. And I think that's the thing that's very hard, because it is discipline, it's commitment. It takes a long time to make change. You have your like epiphany moment where you decide you want to, but there's such a long journey after that.
I call it the sinking feeling. You know, you're like, oh, gosh,
yeah,
I've got to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you the realisation that something's got to happen and, you know, you can't avoid it.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And, you know, sometimes that feeling of fear is quite intoxicating. And I think that's what's driven me to just like want to tick things off. 'Cause I'm like, come on, let's go to it. Let's do this. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm going to take you on, fear. We're going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, because I think that's a really good way to look at it, is almost to look at the fear and see it as a bit of a mountain to climb rather than something you need to run away from. Because, you know, thinking back to this idea of it being your subconscious or whatever you want to call it, it's trying to keep you safe, but it's usually out of date. It's usually a child version of yourself trying to sort of avoid risk. And actually that can be super damaging, because yeah, you're avoiding these risks, but at the same time, it can stop you from living a life well lived, basically. Yeah.
And so what advice can you share right now with anyone listening who's thinking, I want to make a change, or I just need to pick up that call and ring that group, or I just want to start this? Because, you know, like we've highlighted, it isn't easy.
Yeah, I think it's not easy. And I think one thing is to sort of accept that change will take time. And I guess be cautious of that, because that can lead you down a road of procrastinating. So you want to be careful about sort of taking too much time on changes. But they do take time. And I think don't happen overnight. And you can have like a moment where you decide to do it. And that's great. And that can often be the like motivating trigger moment. But I think there's a lot more to come after that. You do have to kind of really commit. I do think saying things out loud is very important. Like, have a word with yourself, because that is like, that is what
have a word
which is what therapy kind of is. It's someone doing that for you. But what that is doing is just saying, look, come on, you know you want this. And I think writing things down can be useful in that sense as well, holding yourself accountable. So you described with the cello, you almost have to put it in your diary and be like, I am doing that. That's in my diary today. That's something I just have to do.
Yeah.
And I think those kind of themes, they can help kind of make change a bit more concrete and feel a bit more doable, I think.
So who looks after you?
So I've got a
You just put a massive, there was a massive smile on your face then, right?
So I've got a very, very, very good group of pals who I've like have been my pals since, well, some of them since I was a kid, some of them since I was sort of 18. And they're kind of a real network for me. I've got my partner, he's and then I've got a lot of siblings.
So there's a lot of people around you keeping you in check.
Got a good.
We're just going to make sure that you're okay. All the therapists and people who, you know, give advice and look out for us. Not that I've got one. Maybe I might have to stop booking you. Alice, thank you so much.
No worries. Lovely to speak to you.